bitch, please.
Oh, bitch, please, my ass. You want a sandwich?
Dig that. Oh, hell yeah.
She's a bad man. I'm a black man in a white world. I'm a black man in a white world.
If I wasn't a Christian man, I'd probably be kicking in your ass.
Thank you.
Welcome to the latest episode of the JB's Low Tech Podcast. I'm going to do something very different before the commercial break. I'm going to actually answer a question sent to me by my dear sister Charlotte in St. Louis, Missouri. She asked me, did I hear you right? Members of the NCAA are suing the NCAA? Are suing themselves? And I told her, you heard it right because... And I'll explain this again, and I explained it to her on the phone. The NCAA is made up of members, volunteer member schools. Nobody forces them to be a part of the NCAA. The 100 people that work in Indiana don't make the rules. They just enforce them and investigate them. They don't make the rules or the laws or the bylaws or the guidelines or whatever you want to call it. They don't make them. They only enforce them. College presidents and ADs make the rules. And those college ADs and presidents are voluntary members of the NCAA. Their schools are. So nobody's holding a gun to their head and saying, you have to be a part of the NCAA. Now, I know some of you are going to say, well, that's the only way they're going to get basketball money, and that's the only way they can be part of CFP. Well, that's not true because CFP is not run by the NCAA. It's run by the College Football Playoff Committee. But the basketball tournament is, and the softball tournament, and the baseball tournament. So we can't be a part of that. That part is true. But you can go do your own damn thing if you want to. You don't have to follow the rules of the NCAA. But if you voluntarily want to be a part of it, then you have to abide by the rules. That's why I don't understand judges who hide behind antitrust laws don't throw most of these things out. Because my first question as a judge would be, aren't you a member of the NCAA? Yes, Your Honor. Aren't all members voluntary? Yes, Your Honor. So why are you suing yourself? Because you approve the rules that you're fighting. NIL, transfer portal, whatever rule they're fighting, they voted on it and passed. My sister asked me that question because she thought I was going crazy or she was going crazy. No, that is the case. I just wanted to answer that for my sister before I went to a commercial break here on the JB's Low Tech Podcast.
Hi, I'm Mike Bryant, and I'm driving my car safely and legally communicating on my phone. Minnesota law allows a driver to use their cell phone to make calls, text, listen to music or podcasts, and get directions by voice command or single-touch activation without holding your phone. Violations are very expensive.
The National Safety Council reports that cell phone use while driving leads to 1.6 million crashes per year, and nearly 400,000 injuries are caused by texting and driving. Not surprising, since 4 seconds with your eyes off the road is like driving the length of a football field blindfolded. And research shows that just 2 seconds increases the risk of an accident up to 24 times. Texting may only take a second, but it can end your life or ruin it forever. Please, drive safely and stay alive.
Find Bradshaw and Bryant, personal injury attorneys at MinnesotaPersonalInjury.com.
Bradshaw and Bryant.
We are children of production, produced in conjunction with the urgency of our
clowns were designed.
Gonna blow the cobwebs out your mind.
Welcome back to the latest episode of the JB's Low Tech Podcast. And yes, college athletics could use a Dr. Funkenstein to blow the cobwebs of their mind open or away or whatever you want to call it, because it is going crazier and crazier. And the title of this episode, The Big Flex, once I get deeper into it, will prove that. But anyway, I thought I would start this episode off with where the hell the state of college sports are. There are no real transfer policy right now. Cannot police NIL deals. So holy heck is going on. You can transfer anywhere when you want to now because there's no policy. NIL, which was never meant to be used as a recruiting inducement, now can be used as a recruiting inducement because Tennessee and Virginia Tech sued the NCAA, which gets back to my show opening comment. They sued themselves for the right to then have a rule be disqualified. Instead of just doing it the way they're supposed to do, bring it up in their national committee, take a vote, yay or nay, and move on with life. Yes, they have national conventions, and that's where they make all these rule changes, put them as law, that the poor 100-and-something people who actually work at the NCAA office have to enforce. And then you have some knucklehead school turn around and sue them. And everybody believes that those 100-and-something people at the NCAA are the people who write the laws. They only enforce them. But again, I digress. What else? May owe $3 billion in NIL back pay to former athletes. I did not stutter. May own $3 billion in NIL back pay to former athletes who, of course, are suing over the fact that their name, image, and likeness was used and they didn't get a cut of these big TV contracts now. And so now these schools may have to pony up money to pay former athletes to get this done. There are three cases that may deem athletes employees. If that happens, good luck. Because you're going to start seeing teams disappear. You're going to start seeing programs dropping, not only sports, but dropping a level. Because they won't be able to pay even minimum wage to pay athletes. And of course, anytime when this happens, 50% of the paid athletes will have to be female athletes. So you can't just load up on football and basketball and call it a day. We're paying our athletes. No, no, no. You're going to have to, if it's 300 men, then you're going to have to do 300 women. Minimum wage or higher, depending on where the school wants to. One Ivy League school, and you know, that's the Penns and that's the Harvards and that's the, you know, the Ivy League schools. One Ivy League school is unionizing. Good luck to them. As somebody who spent his last 25 years as a union employee, good luck, because you're opening up to being cut or being fired, or being told that you can't transfer, that this is your salary, take it or leave it, and everything else that a union contract brings. These kids don't understand it. They see a little money on the table, and they want to run to the money. You don't want to unionize. It is the worst thing you want in your case is to be in a union. For me, as an adult who's working a 9-to-5, it's great to be a union in the sense I have union protection, and my supervisor can't come in and say, I don't smile enough, so we're going to let you go. Why would I say that? I've seen some of our contracted employees at the University of Minnesota actually get fired for not smiling enough or not talking enough. Just stupid stuff like that. The union protects me from that. So not saying they won't get union protection, these athletes, but they got to understand they're going to be signing away a bunch of stuff if you become a union. I can't negotiate contracts or a contract with the university. My union does that. I can't negotiate NIL with the given university if I was an athlete who was unionized. They'll just tell you, here's your money. You're now a minimum wage athlete. Good luck. And there's the next one I'm going to save. And also, a school suing, this isn't the one I'm going to save, a school suing its leave to exit. And that's Florida State, who just won't give it up. They are in court right now because they believe if they can get out of the ACC, that the Big Ten or the SEC, which have made it known that they don't carry enough clout to actually bring you in TV, you know, for the TV partners to give us a full pro rata share for to cover you, and the other teams aren't willing in the or other schools within the conference aren't willing to take a haircut to go from $75 to $100 million to $65 and $90 million just to add Florida State. No, no, no. Florida State, you are making possibly a big mistake, which would make you a independent with like Notre Dame. And, you know, you hear them borrowing, they're going to borrow money from a private equity fund. Good luck. Because not only at that point, once you buy your way out of the ACC, not only do you not have a TV contract per se, because you're not in the conference, but now you at some point you got to start paying back that private equity company that floated you $500 million to $1 billion. You're doubling your debt to do this. So you can be a part of what you think is the elite of the elite conferences to then get more money. Yes, the ACC is only getting 26 to $35,000 a school for media rights, but that's the deal they signed. Whereas the Big Ten, like I said, is going to be somewhere between $75 and $110 million a school per year. So that's why everybody's clamoring to get to the Big Ten. And the SEC is somewhere between 65 and 95 itself. These schools are clamoring to get into these two big conferences. But to get out of ACC, it's going to cost you a lot of money. I'm not sure that the schools have the wherewithal to make it happen, because they're going to have to buy their way or sue their way, and suing costs you a lot of money in court. Nobody's covering your court costs, not the conference, because you're making them pay money to fight you in court, not the TV people, because they'll just say, well, I have a contract with you, a binding contract with your conference, so I have a binding contract with you. I don't need to let you go. Why would I let you out of the contract to then only turn around and pay you more money? TV networks don't work that way. Speaking of TV networks, you might have heard the ESPN or somebody in ESPN claim that they had a deal signed with the CFP, the College Football Playoff, for $1.5 billion or $7 billion or whatever it was over so many years, or $1 billion plus a year. That's true with the CFP, not the schools. So there's really not a signed deal yet for the College Football Playoff. And who's happy about that? Who's happy about that is Fox, CBS, NBC, because right now they're being boxed out of the College Football Playoff. That deal would only be to ESPN, who would then sublet some games or bowl games out to those other entities. I know Fox for sure, which was the reason why we had the alliance, was pushing the Big Ten to slow things down, because they want a part of the College Football Playoff, be it the first round, the finals, or something. They want some of that on their TV air. People live sports is the last bastion of what they call sit down and watch live. Appointment TV, they call it. They are the last, pro sports are the last bastion of that type of TV broadcasting where they sit down, have it live, and people have to make time in their day to sit down and watch it. So that's why these TV companies are paying so much money to pay for this. These leaks that there was a signed deal came from within ESPN, of course, to make themselves look good, maybe to force a deal. But schools started saying, hey, we don't have a contract because we never voted on it. The presidents are like, did you vote on that to the ADs? And the ADs are like that to the presidents. And it's like, no. And the presidents are the only one that have the power to vote on this. So it was like, or presidents or chancellor, whatever your school title they use. And so for ESPN to jump the gun and say they had an agreement was BS, because the only people they had an agreement with was the college football committee, who's just the middleman. The real decision, like I said, is the school's presidents and the TV networks. And Fox is loving the fact that this is being dragged out. Speaking of the college football playoff and the TV networks, one of the things that's slowing a deal down is the governance of the contract, the rules and regulations of the contract. You have two power conferences who are going to make or possibly make a move, and I'm going to save this later on the show, are going to make a move possibly to leave the college football playoff. Well, I might as well get into it now. I'm going to call this episode the Big Flex, because the Big Ten and the SEC are flexing right now. The negotiations for the college football playoff, we haven't even had the 2 years of 12 teams, and already now are negotiating for 14 to 16 teams, with those two conferences getting three each automatic bids, and the ACC getting two, and the Big 12 getting two, and the group of five getting one, and whatever's remaining in that math is to the highest ranked by the conference committee. To be honest, that could be more SEC and Big Ten schools, or it could be some more Pac-12 schools, or if God is willing, maybe one more group of five school. But it's stacking the decks even higher for those power conferences. Another reason why I'm calling this Big Flex, because it is a hot discussion right now. Like I said, that the Big Ten and SEC, if they don't get their way with how many bids they get, how bids they get, how the money split up, how teams are selected, and all that may split away from the college football playoffs and form their own playoffs. Let's face it, between the SEC and the Big Ten, the only schools that are missing from which people would really care to watch, Miami, ACC, Florida State, ACC, Clemson, ACC, maybe North Carolina, ACC, with the Big 12. It's kind of a stretch right now. They don't really have a power football. They have some comers like Arizona and Kansas, Louisville, but they don't have like a bell ringer in their conference that one of the power schools would want, or power conferences, I'm sorry, would want. And if they did, they would add them anyway, because those schools would happily join the Big Two. We're in the midst of having the Big Flex. They are flexing to see what the other conferences are willing to give in. Or are they willing to tell the Big Ten and the SEC, screw you, go away and do whatever you want to do, because you're going to do it anyway, and leave the rest of us alone. problem for the rest of them is, which TV companies care enough to carry their products? And if they do, it's not going to be anywhere close for the amount of money the Big Two would bring. There's a big flex happening. It's happening really quiet. Some people are commenting on it, but it's not really getting the attention that it needs to get. And by the time it gets the attention that it needs to get, everybody will be sitting around go, well, that happened fast. We went from 4 to 12 to 14, 16 to they took their ball and ran. How did that happen? Well, I'm telling you right now, it's happening. Pay attention, people. If you're a college sports fan, pay attention right now. Open your eyes and open your ears. The two big conferences started flexing. They started with the Big Ten wanting more CFP guarantees and the SEC wanting more money for their participation because they've had the most schools in the college football playoff in the four-team era. They're flexing. Should the ACC and the Big 12 and the Group of Five give them the double bird and call their bluff? Or should they give in and give them everything they want so they stick around to make them more money? It is a difficult dance, and it'll be interesting to see the ballet that goes on to do that. As I stated before, the 14-team playoff could mean three Big Ten, three SEC, two ACC, two Big 12, one Group of Five, and then three open bids for three teams, no matter if they're ACC, Big 12, Big 10, SEC, Group of Five. But more than not, they're going to be Big 10 or SEC schools. So it's time for those other conferences to draw a line in the sand and say, hey, are you for yourselves, which college conference commissioners' job, number one, is to look out for the betterment of their conference, not college sports overall. They get paid to protect and take care of their schools in their conference. Let's stop and take a moment and really think about college athletics. When I first went to school in 1980, and I went to a Big Ten school that had 10 schools, or you went to a Big 12 conference that had 12 schools. You know, you had the SEC and the ACC who you could literally draw a circle on a map and you had all their schools. Now you can't do that because, you know, the ACC's got Stanford and Cal from out west and all the crazy other things. You know, the Big Ten has four schools from out west and all the crazy other things that went on with that. But there has been some good things for college athletics. Here's one. Athletes transfer far less than the normal student body does. I'm going to repeat that. Athletes transfer far less than the normal student body does. Now, all the hand-wringing and teeth-mashing would make you to believe that every player is transferring every year in college sports. A lot less than a normal student body. And a student body transfers because they're impatient. They get more information now. I mean, when I was in school, you had to go to a library and pull up old data on a college to even consider transferring. Now you can go to Google and find out if they're a top 50, a top 100, a top 150. Do they offer your program? How long does it take to get in your program? And all these things because you're ticked off at the school that you chose. Of course, athletes don't think that way. They think about playing time, NIL, and as the coach stroking my back. But again, athletes transfer far less than the normal student body does. Now, this also goes back, got to remember, 45% of the college athletes who put their name in the transfer portal land either nowhere or back in junior college to restart their career, go to a junior college, hopefully get to a power school. But now, in that case, you're fighting other players who have done that, and you're also you're now facing and fighting a whole freshman class that has gone through and has stayed loyal but wants to transfer also. The athletes and their parents have to get a lot more serious about looking at things with a clear, focused eye when they want to transfer from one school to another in college athletics, because I don't think that happens a lot. I just think the emotion of the day carries and they just jump in. College athletics has done more for college athletes more than ever. More of them are graduating at a higher rate. When I was in college, I remember that graduation rate for the football team was 13% or less. For the basketball team, it was 10% or less were graduating because they were going pro. So they didn't finish their degrees. They didn't come back to finish their degrees. They just went to try to go pro and kept trying to go pro for a couple of years. That didn't happen. And then they just accepted a job out there in the real world, being a garbage man or working at a bank or whatever they could find. They, if they stayed in school and worked four-year program, they graduated. Now, like I said, you got anywhere from 73 to 80-something percent of football players and basketball players are being handheld through their degree program. I'm not saying that they're cheating and writing papers for them and whatnot, but they are making sure they go to class, that they are talking to professors, they are getting tutoring after practice, and all these things that some people would call hand-holding. But they are getting these now, and they are getting a degree that they can turn into maybe a master's or a decent job upon graduation. Female athletes make more money in college NIL than they do in their pro sport, be it women's basketball, women's hockey, women's soccer, women's softball, whatever the sport is. In college, they're making more money on average off their name, image, and likeness than they are if they went professional. Now, they can't go early for some reason professionally like the men can in basketball after a year. Women's basketball has to wait 3 years. That's the rule of the WNBA, not the NCAA, but the WNBA has the rule that you have to, after your junior year or your year 21, you can then go be drafted. And it's the same thing for pro football. So you have to be there 3 years. You have to be eligible to keep playing. But if you do, you will gain things. But my point, going back to it, was they're making more money as college, especially the females, because they can kill the NIL game on Instagram and whatnot and commercials, or making more money on average in NIL than they do in their pro leagues. Why turn pro early? They don't. They stick it out, and some of them even take the fifth year if they can get it. So it is something that is never discussed. It's always how terrible the NCAA makes life for college athletes. It doesn't make it that difficult when they're making so much more money as a female in your professional league. And female athletes graduate even at a higher level than men athletes. They're at the 90 to 98% graduation rate because a lot of their sports has weak pro sports or no pro sports at all for them to go to once they graduate from college and used up all their eligibility as an athlete. 90 to 98% of female athletes are graduating from college. They're better taken care of than back even when I was in college and even before then. You know, you had the softball coach was also the volleyball coach, may have been the basketball coach for women's teams because the schools wouldn't pay them anything. Now those coaches are getting paid as high as the men. They're just as sophisticated and educated and good as coaches as the men's coaches. So the women are getting the same tutelage on the court, on the ice, or on the field. They also are getting the same equipment. If not, we did a study one year at the University of Minnesota. We were spending more money per female athlete for equipment than male athlete, and that included helmet and shoulder pads, which are very costly. But you have the other things that female athletes need that men athletes don't need, some of the undergarments and whatnot. And there's other things that come about dressing a female athlete that you don't have to spend on a male athlete. So there's money being spent on female athletes at a higher rate. I'd never forget, you know, have a softball player who would graduate and she'd come back 2 years later, 3 years later, and they get what? They get that and they get this and they get, it's like, wait a minute. Don't compare yourself from the time you were here to the time now. Compare yourself from when you were here to 5 to 10 years before you. And if you do, you'd be surprised how much you got that they didn't get. Like when I was in school, the softball team had to share 12 batting helmets and 10 bats and maybe even some gloves if they didn't own one. You know, all we bought was a catcher's mitt and a first baseman's mitt. They had to buy their own. Now every player on the softball team gets one glove per position, new every year. So if you're a pitcher, first baseman, outfielder, that's 3 gloves every year for 4 years. Or if you play 2 positions, that's 2 gloves per year per position. I mean, you know, 1 glove per position every year, but it's 2 gloves total. So don't tell me what you didn't get. And they get their own batting helmet, their own bat bag, their own, you know, I'd give them 10 pairs of batting gloves. You know, just on and on and on. They got spikes in the fall for practice and new game spikes in the spring for the season. Travel shoes and everything. You wouldn't believe the list. You know, I've shown people the list who have been past athletes, and they couldn't believe what they get now. So they get more. They get like a $5,000 wardrobe every year as an athlete to wear to class, to travel in, maybe train in a little, but it's just warm-ups and shoes and T-shirts and sweats and jackets and coats, caps and winter caps and gloves, all this stuff to keep them warm, dry, or whatever, you know, rain gear that they need either for their competition and also they don't need for class, but we would let them have it for classes and whatnot. Here's another interesting fact. Less junior draft eligible athletes are going pro due to NIL. Here's the example. From last year to this year, there are 58 less college football players going into the NFL draft as a junior. 58 less. And I know that doesn't sound like a lot, but, you know, you take it over a 4-year thing, that's 200 and something. And an 8-year, you know, that's 400 and something. And on and on and on. And that's a lot of bodies that you keep in college sports, which only makes the game better because you have experienced athletes who stick around. They're making NIL money, yes, but they stick around. That's how Michigan won a national title this year. They actually had an NIL campaign 5th year for a championship. They had running backs and offensive linemen and defensive linemen who stayed in school one more year because their NIL deals were good enough to hold them tight for another year before they really had to. And you got to understand, some of these kids don't want to turn pro early or want to turn pro when they have to. They would rather stay in college because it's the funnest time of their lives with their brothers and their sisters and hanging out and being coached and being fed and being clothed and being treated for their injuries and all the, taking on trips around the country and maybe even the world. This is the funnest time of their life. Nobody's writing negative things about them in the paper. Well, there's one guy here in Minnesota named Patrick Royce who is happy that the athletes are being paid now, and he said it openly. Now I can rip them. But the majority of the press still doesn't rip college athletes because they understand they're anywhere from 17 to most point 21-year-olds. You might have some older 22s or 23s, but for the most part, they are 22 down to 17-year-olds. And can you remember when you were 17 and trying to make decisions and living by yourself from your parents for the first time in your life? I do, and I was a mess. But they are facing that, but they're deciding now to stay for their fourth year or their fifth year because it's less pressure to stay in college, make some bucks, than to go into the pros and live every day on the edge, worrying about being cut, having your career shortened by an injury, or whatever it may be. So I just found that to be an interesting fact that less athletes are going pro and they would rather stay in college. Where the thought used to be that if you had to leave, you had to hurry up because, you know, you spent 3 years and you weren't making any money. All you got was your scholarship paid for and your room and board paid for, and that was it. You know, you needed money. And also, unfortunately, there are some parents who are like, get out because you need to make money to take care of me. I'd never experienced this. My kids weren't good enough in sports to even have a sniff at pros. But even if they had, I wouldn't have made a decision for them about going pro if they weren't ready physically, mentally, or emotionally, just because I can siphon money off my child. And I've seen it over and over again where parents think they're owed something. And if you think you're owed something for raising your child, you're in the wrong business. You should have never had a child in the first place. Last fact, old coaches want to be head coaches. They don't want to be CEOs. They don't want to be nursemaids. They don't want to have to re-recruit their roster every year and also try to steal somebody else's players, deal with high school players walking in their office and saying, how much are you willing to pay me? School X is willing to pay me this. How much are you willing to pay me? There has been in high-end college basketball and high-end college football, Krzyzewski, Saban, guy at Syracuse that just left, Jim, I hear I say Bohannon, but that's not his name. Well, anyway, he left, and other coaches have either left to take jobs in the pros or, oddly enough, take coordinator or position jobs at other schools because they don't want to deal with being a CEO of what should be a college program. But life has changed. You have to be a CEO. You have to look at it as a Fortune 500 company. And who you bringing in, who you letting go, who are the people you hired to take care of those people and all those things. And there's a group of people who lately have chosen, I'm out, don't want to deal with it anymore, and I can't blame them. But there's a 33-year-old coach down at Arizona, head coach down at Arizona State, named Dillingham is his last name. And he's, like I said, the head coach at Arizona State. He said, as much as people are whining and complaining about what they have to do with their job, for their job and whatnot, there are still 100 people who would take his job in a heartbeat. There are 1,000 people that would take his assistant's jobs in a heartbeat. There are even more people that would just be happy to glom on and be a graduate assistant or whatever in their program. So don't get it twisted and don't get fooled by these old coaches who are just all of a sudden decided, this is too crazy. We need to do something. And if you're not going to do something, I'm out. And they get out. It's just because they're used to the way things were. They're not willing to change. And so they're willing to eventually ride off in the sunset and retire. Or in the case of Chunk, I call him, his name is Chip. I call him Chunk. Think of Chip's last name. He was the head coach at UCLA, and now he's the offensive coordinator at Ohio State. But Chunk decided to take a step down because he just wanted to be a ball coach. I see in my notes I passed something over, and I was talking about the 45% who don't land somewhere. Also, some of them might wind up in HBCUs. But you got to remember, HCBU schools are HBCU, I'm sorry, I always get those letters mixed up, are being poached historically back black college and universities. How hard is it to understand? HB. Well, HBCUs are being poached for their talent. Kid has a great year. Some G5, Power 5 school pops in, we can get you $70,000 on top of your scholarship and your room and board to come play for us. Doesn't mean they're going to go there and start. They're going to play a lot. Most of the time, they're just used as depth on the depth chart. But the school that they're at can't match that. Can't. A lot of HBCU's NIL budget is only $70,000 for a football team. And you have a school who can turn around and offer $70,000 to one kid or $1 million to one kid a year. They'll never catch up. But as players fall by the wayside, HBCU's Division II, Division III, NAIA programs, they get the fall out. So part of that 45% I was talking about that land nowhere lands there. But still, there's a chunk that land nowhere. Not junior college, not HBCU, not Division II, not Division III, not NAIA. They just are on the street and they work out and they go to school on their own, hoping that they can get some coach who remembered that they recruited them and that they can then go to a different school. Probably as a walk-on, meaning that they get no aid, no room and board, so they're still paying. If they're a valued enough walk-on, the school will give them an NIL deal and then throw money in that to pay for tuition and room and board on top of the NIL deal, but that doesn't happen for everybody. So it's a lot of stuff going on out there in college athletics. But like I said, be warned, people. I told you, a big flex is quietly going on right now, and people don't realize it. And when it happens, or when it's averted at the last second because the Big Ten and the SEC got what they wanted. And if they don't get what they want, they're going to flex and go, Audi, don't be surprised. You heard it here, maybe first. Other people were trying to tell you this, and people were snoozing on it. And if it happens, everybody's going to be like, oh, my God, what? How'd this happen? Well, I can't believe we've all who have college football podcasts and TV shows, YouTube shows and everything have been trying to tell you guys things are headed this direction. I heard a former ESPN executive that he's on a show with Pablo Torres. He was the head of ESPN Sports Division. He's no longer in that position. But the first thing out of his mouth when they talked about if the Big Ten and SEC leaves, then he wants relegation. And I said this over and over again. Who's going to vote to be relegated? Meaning if you finish last, you're out of the Big Ten. You're out of the SEC. You're out of the whatever. What school president, athletic director, head coach is going to vote to do that? Fans may see it as fun, or, you know, it happens in the European soccer leagues and everybody sweat. And it's like, number one, you got to have losers and winners in college athletics. You got to keep around your losers in those conferences, and those losers have to get better and maybe become winners. But you can't have all winners, because then you dilute the winning programs, your blue bloods, because the bottom of your blue bloods will become losers. So why would you have relegation? Leave the Minnesotas, the Purdues, the Wisconsin, the Iowas, Nebraska for now, Rutgers, Maryland. Leave them in the Big Ten. Let them try to get and become one of the big boys in the conference. And if they don't, let them play in their little bowl game at the end of the season and just move on with life. No relegation. You can take relegation and I'll give you double birds and you can shove it where the sun doesn't shine. Well, that's my final comment on that. I am tuckered out because I did about 50 minutes talking, but there was a lot to cover. I'll be back at the end of this commercial to wrap this up here on the JB's Low Tech Podcast.
Wait a minute. Was that text you sent so important you missed your turn? So important you just ran a red light? Is that next text so important that you won't see the ball roll into the street and the child chasing it? Hi, I'm Mike Bryant from Bradshaw & Bryant. Please remember that having your eyes off the road for as little as 4 seconds equals 100 yards. That's the length of an entire football field. And when your eyes are off the road that long, anything can happen. If you need to text, please pull off the road. Texting and driving isn't worth it. It's against the law, and it may cause serious injury to you or others, or even death. That's more important than anything you'll text. Please don't text and drive. I hope you're never hurt in a collision, but if you are, please contact us.
Find Bradshaw & Bryant, personal injury attorneys at minnesotapersonalinjury.com.
Working harder, going farther, with Mike Bryant on your side, seeking justice for the injured. Bradshaw & Bryant.
Drank whiskey, Pancho drank the wine. Couple of 70s group songs on the podcast today. War and Parliament Funkadelic, just throwing it back to the 70s. and early 80s, when music was pretty good in my book, but every generation says that, people who grew up on Bach's Fifth Symphony may have thought the same thing about that too. It's just evolution. My comments have been about the evolution of college athletics. People were turning a blind eye to it, and it's going to whack them in the face coming here soon, and they're going to be like, oh, my God, what's happened? If the big flex happens, it's going to be a big deal. Please tell others about the podcast. Continue to listen. Tell a friend about the JB's Low Tech Podcast.
JB
is my name, and f***ing up motherfuckers is my game.
Right on. Negro, Black, African American,
Black.
Django.
JB.
Damn, Dolomite.
Great God in heaven, you know I
JB,
our great Negro sex machine.